The Cincinnati Reds are only 8-8, but their pitching staff has been one of the best in baseball. Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome into another episode of First Pitch, your daily source of baseball talk. We've got a packed show today. We are going to be talking a lot of Reds baseball today. As moving forward, we are going to take a couple days each week and kind of gush and or lambast the two teams that we follow the most. And Tuesdays will be Reds days and Thursdays will be Phillies days, unless we swap those up to throw y'all off so y'all still listen, even if y'all aren't Reds or Phillies fans. But yeah, we're going to be talking some Reds today. So hope you enjoy the Reds talk with our incumbent Reds faithful, Drew Crabtree. You can follow him on Twitter at DrewCrabtree12. I'm Troy Brock. You can find me on the X Machine at Troy B Baseball. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on the notification icon so you can be notified when another episode goes live. If you're listening on audio, give us a 5-star rating, share the show with your friends, send them to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can get their daily source of baseball talk, and check out the First Pitch newsletter. It was back in circulation this morning, a little bit different than what we've normally been doing. Is more just a straight article style, so check that out. Link for that is in the description. It is free to subscribe to the newsletter, though we do appreciate any and all paid subscriptions because they help keep the bills on around here. How you doing this morning, Drew?
I am glad that the off day is over and my second place Cincinnati Reds are back in action tonight. It's good. It's the temperature dropped a solid 30 degrees up here in beautiful Toledo, Ohio. I just got over this seasonal allergy nonsense, and I'm willing to bet that I'm going to feel like garbage here soon again.
I'm right there with you, buddy. I know you and I have talked about it, and I'm sure everybody can hear it in my voice, but I've been dealing with it for the past couple days, and so it's not fun. Hopefully you can get past that this go around. But something that we cannot get past this go around is talking about the games that took place on yesterday's slate. And it was not a full slate, only 10 games yesterday, but they did take place, and we're going to talk about them. And the first game was the Nationals at the Pirates. It was Paul Skenes' day, and Paul Skenes did Paul Skenes things. The Pirates won that game 10-3, though he did only strike out 6 batters. Is he washed? Who knows? But the Pirates now move to 6-11, while the Nationals fall to 6-10. Giants at the Phillies. We're going to skip that one. I'm just kidding. Giants win 10-4. They move to 12-4. Phillies fall to 9-7. And Taijuan Walker reminded us why he is the worst pitcher in baseball. Only 4 of his 6 runs were earned, though the 2 unearned runs came on a pitcher's error, so they should all 6 be earned. But, you know, that stupid rule, so on and so forth. Red Sox at Rays. The Rays won that one by a slim margin of 16-1. Rays move to 8-8, while the Red Sox fall to 8-10. Shane Boz is now 2-0 with a 1.42 ERA. Royals at the Yankees. The Yankees take that one 4-1 to move to 9-7. Royals fall to 8-9. Carlos Carrasco gets the dub. He's 2-1 now with a 5.94 ERA. And Seth Lugo takes the L, 1-2 with a 3.86 ERA. And Devin Williams, despite his struggles this year, picked up his second save of the year. The Atlanta Braves put one in the win column for the first time in what feels like forever as they beat the Blue Jays 8-4 to move to 5-11, and the Blue Jays fall to 9-8. Grant Holmes was magnificent in this start, and he is now 1-1 with a 3.78 ERA. Mets beat the Twins 5-1, probably Clay Holmes' best start so far with the Mets, and the Mets are now 11-5, while the Twins are 5-12. Wrote an article yesterday about how the Mets can continue to build their lead in the National League East because they have a weak schedule. So check that out over on Mets on SI. Tigers at the Brewers. Tigers win 9-1, helping Drew's Reds out a little bit there. And Tigers move to 10-6, while the Brewers fall to 8-9. Tariq Skubal is back, baby. He's now 2-2 with a 2.66 ERA, and he is just trending in the right direction after a rough 2 starts to start the year. Astros at the Cardinals. Cardinals win that one 8-3. They are now 8-8, tied with Drew's Reds. Astros are 7-9. Framber Valdez takes the L in that one. And Nolan Arenado, after declining to be traded to the Houston Astros in the offseason, hit a home run against the Houston Astros in yesterday's ballgame. Cubs at the Padres. Cubs dropped that one 10-4. Padres are now 14-3, while the Cubs are 11-8. Yeah, it's Cubs are still good. Padres might be the best team in baseball, so the Dodgers better watch out, because what the Padres are doing so far this year is pretty scary. And finally, the Rockies at those same Dodgers. Dodgers win that one 5-3. They are now 12-6, while the Rockies fall to 3-13. Dustin May is 1-1 with a 106 ERA, and Tanner Scott picks up his fifth save of the year. Drew, any final thoughts on yesterday's small slate of ball games?
There was a lot of runs scored. That was crazy. 10 runs, then 16 runs, and 10 runs, and 10 runs. You know, making up for the fact that there wasn't a full slate of games. They're like, you know what? Let's score a normal amount of runs for a 15 game day. Everyone loves runs, but going back to Paul Skeens, he's gonna be okay. Pitching Ninja on the old Twitter loves posting Paul Skeens, and there was one that was like this cutter that was disgusting. It looked like it would have knocked out a right-handed batter and then broke back in for a strike. And Paul Skeens is just nasty. And it's just not fair that a human being can make a baseball do things like that. And I very much look forward to the day when the Pirates trade him away to a contender for nothing, like they did with all their other stars.
You know what? Maybe with the way the season has gone so far this year, maybe the Pirates will trade him to the division rival Cincinnati Reds for Austin Hayes.
Well, when Austin Hayes is a 5-WAR player by the trade deadline, yes, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's adding Paul Skeens to that rotation in Cincinnati would be nasty, because the Reds just have a fantastic rotation, especially the top two guys in the rotation, with the second of those two guys going tonight. And that's really what we're going to start our Reds talk about today, is the rotation and how successful they've been to this point. And, you know, as a whole unit through 16 games, their starting rotation has a 2.68 ERA. And of course, you know, that is bolstered pretty heavily by what Hunter Green has done to this point, as well as Nick Lodolo, as both of those guys have ERAs sub one, with Hunter Green sitting at 0.98 and Nick Lodolo's sitting at 0.96. So, and both guys also have whips below one as well to go along with that. So is this what we can come to expect from the top of the Cincinnati Reds rotation throughout the year? Or is Hunter Green finally arrived as the true ace that he is, with Nick Lodolo being a 1A to his one?
I think that they are finally hitting what everyone expected them to be. Obviously, Hunter Green was that second overall pick back in 2017, and then he missed that first entire season due to Tommy John. And then he worked his way up. And one of the things I will never forget about Hunter Green is one of his first starts as a rookie was against Pittsburgh. And he and the Reds threw a combined no-hitter and lost. I will never forget that, because it's the worst. Now, as for this year, yeah, Hunter Green has been pitching as if he's the best pitcher in baseball. And to this point, it's really, really hard to argue against it. His baseball savant page is lit up red. The only blue on the screen is the average exit velo, which is about 90.8. Makes sense when you're throwing it as hard as he is. If they make a little bit of contact, the ball's going to travel. It has helped that he has pitched mostly on the road, because pitching at Great American Ballpark, a slight little breeze will turn a pop fly to first into a shot to the moon deck. His ground ball rate is really, really low, 23.4. He's in the sixth percentile right now, but that's not really who he's been. He's a strikeout pitcher. He's gotten flyouts. He's mostly missing barrels. Those are still on the barrels, and the hard hits are on the lower end. but everything else, obviously, is fastball velo, 40 is in the 99th percentile, is K percentage in 86th percentile, is walk percentage in the 86th percentile. These are things that walking specifically was an issue with him before because it wasn't nearly as efficient. And now he's realizing, hey, I'm actually pretty good at throwing baseballs. And he's pinpointing exactly where it needs to go. I'm loving what I'm seeing from Hunter Green to this point, and I'm hoping that he can keep it up for a 30 game season. But the Locked On Reds guys that I listen to have floated the idea that he and Nick Lodolo, guys like that, if the Reds want to make a push for the playoffs at any point. Obviously, that's putting the cart before the cattle at this point, because it's still the Reds. They'll have to skip a couple starts, and that's obvious. That's what Rhett Lauder is for, which would be awesome. I'm like, that's a hell of a lot better than putting Nick Martinez out there as a sixth starter. I love what I've seen from Hunter Green to this point. And he finally beat those Pirates that he's struggled against. Cy Young on the way, I think, at some point.
Yeah, and I think that this is more than just a small sample size thing, because I sent you this tweet yesterday from MLB Network. The ERA leaders in across baseball since July 1st of last year, and Hunter Green is at the top of that board with a 1.0000 ERA since July 1st, 2024. And just this year alone, he leads Major League Baseball in innings pitched at 27 2/3. Game started, I'm assuming, tied for that with four. Leads in B-WAR at 1.5. Leads in WHIP at 0.578. And leads in hits per nine at 3.9. And, of course, last year he did set his career high in innings pitched at 150 1/3. So you can realistically expect him to qualify for the ERA title this year, assuming he does stay healthy as far as a workload concern goes, because you can generally expect a 10 to 20% increase safely over a workload year over year. So you can expect Hunter Green to get 165, 180 innings this year, not counting the playoffs, just in the regular season alone. And if he can keep up what he's done through these first 27 2/3 innings of that, then yeah, he's got a really good chance of contending for that Cy Young and potentially winning it with what he's shown us so far and what this year and what he's shown us for the better part of the last year of baseball. And I do think that Hunter Green is legitimately an ace, and I think he's kind of staked his claim on that term, and it's going to be exciting to watch him. He's one of the young, exciting players on the Cincinnati Reds, along with Nick Lodolo, who is right there with him this year with a 0.96 ERA. And he's starting tonight, and we'll kind of talk about that game a little bit later on. But between those two guys, is that the best 1-2 punch in baseball right now?
It very well could be. At least right now, I say that it is, just because there are a couple of guys out there that have started a bit cold. Obviously the Phillies have a couple of really good baseball throwers over there. But Nick Lodolo has been what we expected him to be. Now, it's kind of funny when you think about it. They look like they're about the same size. Nick Lodolo is 2 years older than Hunter Green, but he was drafted 2 years after because he went to TCU and Hunter Green was drafted straight out of high school. Nick Lodolo has been fantastic to this point. He's not walking guys. He's 96th percentile in walks. But the weird thing is, because Nick Lodolo has some seriously nasty stuff, he's not striking people out. In the past, the last couple of years, he was a really good strikeout pitcher because, his K per nine as a rookie in 2022 was 11.4. In 2023, it was 12.3. And then last year, it was 9.5. This year, his K per nine is 3.9. He's struck out a grand total of 8 batters in 3 starts. Normally I would be a lot more concerned about that, but he's inducing a lot of ground balls. He's inducing a lot of weak contact. With all that off-speed stuff, it's hard to square up on it, especially that ridiculous breaking ball that for right-handed batters looks like it's coming into the strike zone, and then it breaks and hits your back foot. It's the funniest thing to watch. It's about as beautiful as that Luis Castillo changeup that just his Baseball Savant page is honestly a mixed bag, but Nick Lodolo has been doing it incredibly well. He's pitching nothing he's doing is at a crazy clip. Like Hunter Green overwhelmingly uses that four seam fastball because that's his strength. Except for in that first start when he used that slider a lot because of that fastball not being there. Nick Lodolo has 4 pitches that he's used. The four seam's 29%, the sinker's 26%, the changeup 24%, the curveball 22%. He's got a full repertoire of pitches and he uses them to his benefit. He's seeing the zone incredibly well, and I think that tonight will be a good test. Because while the Mariners may not have the lineup that other teams have had that he's faced, he's going, you know, toe-to-toe with a former ace of the staff, Luis Castillo, and that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But no, I think as of right now, the way that these two are pitching, they're the top 1-2 punch in baseball. We'll have to see how that tracks throughout the summer and how it continues, because these two guys have had their injury issues. Nick Lodolo had that weird blister that completely derailed his season last year. I'm really looking forward to it, because when these two are on, the Reds can win at least 2 out of every 5 games. And then, you know, whenever Brady Singer is up, the Reds decide to score 10 runs. So there's 3. That's not too bad.
Yeah, if you're winning 3 out of every 5, you're doing pretty good, and you're pretty safely going to be in that playoff mix. But yeah, to your point there on Nick Lodolo's health concerns, his career high, he also set a career high in innings pitched last year with 115 and a third. So you really can't expect him to qualify for the ERA title safely as a workload is concerned this year. But, you know, he has, it's through 3 starts and 18 and two-thirds innings so far, though he's only struck out 8 batters, he's also only walked 1 batter in that time. Mm-hmm. And he leads the National League in walks per 9 at 0.5. And his whip, like I said earlier, is below 1 at 0.696. And, you know, he's shown that so far this season he is capable of doing it. And it's, again, it's not like he's facing weak lineups. He faced the San Francisco Giants twice. Mm-hmm. Twice. So, and they came within 2 weeks of each other. So the familiarity of the Giants lineup is there. And the worst of the 2 starts against those Giants was the first one on March 29th. He gave up 2 earned runs. And he hasn't given up an earned run since those 2 that he gave up in his first start. He did give up a run against Milwaukee on April 3rd, but it was unearned. But it's just he's buckled down, he's settled in, and he's starting to show that, you know, he can hang right up there at the top of the rotation with Hunter Green. And he's not the only Nick that's in the rotation, but the other Nick that's in the rotation is it's kind of questionable of why he's in the rotation, which right now is kind of, he's just filling a gap to get until other players like the man you mentioned earlier, until he comes back from injury. Andrew Abbott just returned. So, you know, Andrew Abbott's going to start taking some more of those starts from Nick Martinez. And we kind of talked about it in the offseason, why the Reds offered Nick Martinez a qualifying offer, because there was really no question that he was going to accept it with what he's shown us throughout his career. And he's really not a pitcher that's worth that much money over a single year. And, you know, how do you feel about Nick Martinez and the Reds offering him the qualifying offer over the offseason?
I think Nick Martinez did a great job of selling himself a la Kirk Cousins in the NFL. He's not the elite pitcher, but he did what was asked of him really well. Last year, he was like a starter. He was a bullpen arm, and then he was also the guy that would go the length on like a bullpen day as that second guy. And he did really well with those. When he wasn't the starter, he came in relief and would pitch as well as anybody in the pitching staff. But then you go to this year, he's got a 6.06 ERA in three games over 16 and a third. He's got an ERA plus of 71. He's got a 1.224 whip. At this point, he's the weak link in that rotation, which obviously is not saying all that much considering how good the top three have been. But with all that money allocated to him, obviously it's the Reds. They have the money, blah, 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 blah. But with how the Reds do business, $21 million could have been spent a number of different ways. I don't think it would have landed them, you know, an Anthony Santander or anything like that, because I doubt that they were even splashing in those waters, considering this is also the same franchise that refused to give Nick Castellanos a call after that option. But that's, yeah, I don't know. Nick Martinez is unfortunately now the weakest link in that rotation in an organization that its strength right now is in its rotation, both of the major league and in the farm system. Chase Burns has been ridiculous in his first two starts. He's probably not making his way up to the big leagues this year, but next year. No, I want to see more Rhett Lauder when he is available, because last year he was awesome. I want to see just anybody else at this point. It's just not great. The Reds have had worse pitchers. I can honestly say that. Last year, Nick Martinez had a 4B war. That was great. But if you're trying to get back to the playoffs, I don't know that Nick Martinez is an arm in your rotation when everybody is fully healthy.
Yeah, yeah, you're spot on. And I while you were discussing Nick Martinez there, I did pull up the splits for him as a starter and a reliever for his career as well as last year in specific. And across his career, he's made 106 starts compared to 137 relief appearances. In those 106 starts, he has a 4.6 ERA across 573 and a third innings. In the 137 relief appearances, his ERA is 2.9, which is a good deal better than 4.6. It's 1.7 runs better per nine innings, which over the course of a full 162 game season, that's pretty significant between 4.6 and 2.9. Now, last year, he was better as a starter than he has been throughout his career. He had 16 starts last year, 89 innings, and he had a 3.84 ERA across those starts, compared to 26 games in relief and 53 and a third innings. But he was also better in a relief role last year than he was in his career, with a 1.86 ERA as a reliever. And so, you know, it kind of makes you wonder if he's going to improve and kind of help the bullpen whenever guys like Rhett Lauder do return to the rotation. And then you have, you know, Hunter Green, Brady Singer, Nick Lodolo, Andrew Abbott, Rhett Lauder, maybe even Carson Spears starting games as the six or seven man rotation. And Nick Martinez's primary function is coming out of the bullpen, because again, the starting rotation's ERA for the year is 2.68, which is second in baseball so far this year. It's the second best starting rotation ERA in baseball, behind only the New York Mets. And the Mets, who I've said a time or two, I'm not sure if anybody's heard it, but they faced some pretty weak competition this year as far as pitching and hitting. And then when you look at the Reds starters, the guys who have started, Nick Lodolo leads with a 0.96 ERA. Hunter Green's in second, 0.98. Andrew Abbott in his one start has a 1.8 ERA. Brady Singer is next, 3.18. Carson Spears, 4.82. And then Nick Martinez at 6.06. So you have to figure that if Nick Martinez was coming out of the bullpen already this year, the Reds' rotational ERA would be much, much closer to two even, if not even below that, because of the workload that Hunter Green has put in with his 27 and two-thirds innings, again, leading baseball in that metric, and how many more games the Reds could have potentially won if Nick Martinez wasn't putting up a 6.06 ERA across 16 innings.
I think it probably would have helped a little bit. Now, I understand. I went back and looked. He had a stretch. Yeah, the final 88 and a third innings that he pitched for the Reds last year. That included 11 starts, 26 total appearances. In those 88 and a third, he had a 2.24 ERA. That includes one start where the Reds somehow won, where he went 4 1/3 and gave up six. If you take that one start out, he had a 1.714 ERA over the course of the last of 84 of the last 88 innings. So I understand for his sake, he definitely bet on himself and he won. I think the Reds were seeing that and they said, all right, well, this is the guy that we're going to invest in, which is odd considering he's almost 35 years old now. Of that stretch, those 11 games, one of them was the only complete game of the Reds season, which was the weirdest thing. It was the September 27th against the Cubs. They just let him go eight innings, and he pitched the complete game, gave up one run. I really hope he comes back to form, to what he was at the latter half of last year. I really do, because when you look back, and then you obviously look at the lineup, that $21 million could have been spent on an outfielder. It could have been spent on somebody in addition to an Austin Hayes, so we don't have to watch Jake Fraley give up triples down the line because he's lollygagging to the ball, which is the most frustrating thing. There were a number of ways that this roster could have been fixed. And $21 million to Nick Martinez because of that qualifying offer, because you saw the possibility of a compensatory pick hanging in front of you, is very weird. So I hope for his sake that his next start is awesome. But to this point, they need to either put him as a length man in the bullpen or figure something else out.
Yeah, 100%. You know, you touched on the offense there, kind of struggling to start the season, and they have performed well under expectations when, you know, you have guys like Ellie De La Cruz, Christian Encarnacion Strand, Heimer Candelario, Spencer Steer, that you expect to be really a lot better than they have been to this point in the year, and they just have not done so because as a team, the offense has put up an OPS of only .592. Which ranks 27th in Major League Baseball, ahead of only the Kansas City Royals, the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the Chicago White Sox. And, of course, the Kansas City Royals are another team that we expect to be better offensively and not down there with the White Sox and Pirates. But a lot of that, you know, has the Reds have still dealt with their fair share of injuries this year. And you touched on it. Austin Hayes is due back at some point, probably at some point this week. And he could potentially slot in as the everyday left fielder in Cincinnati. And with his swing, and he could really do some damage at Great American's ballpark. Is Austin Hayes the missing link for getting the offense back on track this year?
I don't think that one player, whether it's Austin Hayes or Tyler Stevenson, is going to give the Reds the jolt. However, if Austin Hayes comes back and Matt McClain, who needs to come back from that hamstring, when they come back, I think it will give a little bit of something, because right now it's Ellie De La Cruz and a bunch of peanut farmers. And while Jose Trevino has been great considering what we expected from him, Jamer Candelario has not been good. TJ Friedl has had a couple of really good games. Jake Vrielly, not good. Spencer Steer looks hurt out there. Like, he had a couple of good games, I think, over the weekend. But just in general, he and CES have been the worst batters in this rotation. CES looks lost half the time, which is incredibly frustrating. No, Austin Hayes. So I don't know if I talked to you about this, but Austin Hayes, when he was really, really bad for the Orioles and then for the Phillies, had that kidney infection. And then evidently that infection spread to his brain and it scrambled him up. Evidently there were players that have said that his entire personality was changed because of this weird illness. And he's now clean, like he's all set. So this spring training, obviously it's still spring training, he looked closer to that, you know, 2023 all-star starter Austin Hayes. So I obviously keep on joking because I'm high on Austin Hayes that he's going to be like a five war player. That would be awesome. I don't think that's in the cards, but I do think that he's going to have a better year than what he had the last couple, because you get an infection in your brain, it probably messes up your ability to swing the bat. But yeah, the Reds need something, because right now Gavin Lux is playing left field. That's all I gotta say about that, honestly.
Yeah, no, I did not know about the infection spreading to his brain. I completely missed that. So now I kind of feel bad for some of the things I've said about him. So thanks, Drew, for ruining my Tuesday. No, he is on a rehab assignment right now. And he's played, if Baseball Reference is updated, he's played three games for Louisville. And he's got a 756 OPS down there in Louisville. He has hit a home run, two RBIs, and he's actually stolen a base also. But we have seen at times this offense kind of struggle to score runs has kind of been the issue for this offense. And you know, the team is missing Matt McClain right now, who was off to a really good start with three home runs. He's tied for the team lead in home runs with Ellie De La Cruz at three, but Ellie's done it in 16 games. Matt McClain had it in eight. Mm-hmm. And so it's, they're missing a big bat there, and he would be leading the team out of batters with 20 or more at bats in OPS with his 861. Otherwise, Ellie De La Cruz is leading the team out of qualifying batters with an OPS of 713. And then it just kind of goes down from there. TJ Friedl, 652. Gavin Lux, 616. CES, 498. Jaime Candelario, 425, and then Spencer Steer at 397. I didn't mean to laugh when I read that. But there have been games where the Reds have struggled to score runs, and there have been other games where they have not struggled to score runs. They scored a combined 25 runs across two games, not back-to-back, but two games over the first week of the season. And for the whole year, they've scored a total of 62 runs. So if you take out those two games of 25 runs, they've scored 37 runs across 14 games, which is less than three runs a game. And while the pitching rotation has done well, the pitching as a whole, not just the rotation, the pitching as a whole has done very well at limiting runs, they've still allowed 51 runs over 16 games. So is this something that they can fix? Is Ellie De La Cruz, is this a sophomore slump? I know this isn't technically his second year, but his second full year, I believe. Is this a sophomore slump that we're seeing from Ilya De La Cruz? Can he bounce back after what he did last year? Can he return to that form, or what are we looking at with this?
So I don't think that he's slumping. I think Ellie's fine. I think that the fact that there are no other threats in that lineup make a massive difference. If you have Matt McClain batting second and, you know, even half of what I think Austin Hayes will be batting cleanup, they have the opposing pitching has to keep that in mind. Like, am I going to pitch to Matt McClain to get Ellie De La Cruz up? Am I going to pitch Ellie De La Cruz to get Austin Hayes up? Right now, we're batting Blake Dunn ahead of Ellie De La Cruz and Gavin Lux in the cleanup. Who are you going to be afraid of? They can focus their energy on Ellie De La Cruz and get him out, because once he gets on base, all hell breaks loose. Whether he's actually stealing the base or the threat of him stealing the base looms, it's just insanity. So the pitchers can focus on getting him out specifically because they know nobody else in this lineup can honestly hurt them. Now, if you get Tyler Stevenson, Austin Hayes, Matt McClain back, you at least have to worry a little bit about more than one player. People forget, because Matt McClain missed all of last year, and then obviously now he's got this hamstring, Matt McClain was better than Ellie De La Cruz when they both came up. He came up first, and he was good in that 2023 season. Like, Matt McClain has, to me, superstar potential. If he can stay healthy, he's going to be great. He can be on the Bobby Witt Jr. level. And people forget about that because of last year, because he missed the entire season. And I think that's going to be the same when, you know, Ronald Acuna returns for the Braves and, you know, people forget how good he is and so on. But right now in this lineup, it's Ellie De La Cruz and a bunch of guys, and the pitching staff can focus on him because they're like, if we get him out, we're set. We will get out of this inning. We can turn the lineup over, all that fun stuff. So I think unless CES starts actually seeing the ball, et cetera, this is probably going to continue because they can focus in on Ellie De La Cruz to make sure that he isn't the one burning them on the base paths until Matt McClain, Austin Hayes, Tyler Stevenson all return.
Yeah, and you know, there's one other guy I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about him, and you're more plugged in on this than I am, but why have we not seen Rhys Hines yet this season?
Because the Reds hate fun. So Rhys Hines is what he is. He's a high strikeout guy that when he makes contact, the ball finds the seats. The thing is that he isn't better, unfortunately, than Will Benson. He's not better than Wilby Marte. And he's probably not going to be better than some of the guys that are going to be coming up through the system, because I anticipate guys like Sal Stewart making it to Louisville this year and so on. But this year in Louisville, AAA, he's got 13 hits over 49 at-bats. He is slashing 265, 345, 490. His OPS is 835, which is not bad. But Rhys Hines is probably – he's got 3 home runs and 11 RBIs. Three of his 13 hits are home runs, sorry. And I think that the Reds, Will Benson, Rhys Hines included, have a massive drop between their major league players and their AAA players. The Locked On Reds guys that I listen to refer to them as 4A players, essentially. They're really good in Louisville, look lost in Cincinnati. Now, obviously, Will Benson has shown that he can have a little bit higher of a ceiling. Obviously, throwing him in a rotation against the Giants, Logan Webb, not fair. especially when he flew in the previous day and then you had to fly him back out the next day. The poor man's sleep schedule has got to be whack right now. I wish that they would give Rhys Hines a shot just for the fun of it because of how exciting last year was. Yeah, outside of the crazy run, he sucked towards the end of his time. But at least he gives you a little bit of oomph off the bench. And if you're going to let Nuevi Marte or Jacob Hurtubise just fester on the bench, you might as well give, if you really think that Nuevi Marte is good, but you're not put him in the lineup, just send him back down to AAA so he can get every day at bats. If you don't think Rhys Hines is part of the future, you might as well bring him up, put him on the bench, pinch hit him, and then every now and then he'll run into one. No, I wish that Rhys Hines was in Cincinnati just for fun, because that run last summer was the most fun that we had in a lost season. Yeah, he'd probably end up batting 110 or something like that in Cincinnati, but that home run that he hits will be 450 feet, and it'd be so much fun.
Right. Yes, and to that point, through his first six games in the majors, you know, notably he hit five home runs. And in that time, he was batting 500, 542, and a 1409 slug for a 1951 OPS. And those five home runs, he was getting base hits as well. You know, he hit 5, 6, 8, 11 base hits. Five of them were home runs. Three of them were doubles, and one was a triple. So out of his first 11 base hits in Major League Baseball, 9 went for extra bases, and 5 were home runs. And you kind of did also touch on it that he kind of needs to get everyday playing time. And after that initial stretch, he spent 4 more days on the major league roster in July before being optioned down. And when he came back up at the end of August, he was not starting every day. He was being used as a bench player, and he did not make a single start from August 27th until the end of the season. And in that time, including the 4 games in July after the 5 home runs and 6 game stretch, he played 18 total games, only had 27 plate appearances, and his triple slash was .042, .148, .083 with 9 strikeouts in those 27 plate appearances and only 1 hit. It was a double for a .231 OPS. So I agree, he does need the everyday playing time, as most players do. You know, you want to get your players everyday playing time so they can stay locked in. And that was probably a big reason of why he struggled down the stretch last year, is because he really wasn't getting that everyday playing time. And but all in all, you know, we went very long on this, but it's needed. We don't have a 30-minute time limit anymore. So it's, the Reds are an exciting team, and they're a promising team. And even though they're 8-8 this year, I think, and I said this in the offseason, I think that they legitimately have an opportunity to make some noise in the NL Central Division, because it's, after the Cubs, there really is no clear favorite for who's going to be the second team in the division. And I don't think that the second team in the division is going to make the postseason with how strong the National League East and the National League West are. I think that they're going to get 5 of the 6 or 6 of the 7, however many it is, playoff berths for the National League. But it's 6, I just remembered. And but the Reds aren't far off, especially with what they've shown us to this point in the season. They just need their offense to be more than just Ellie De La Cruz and the boys.
Yeah. One note, Rhys Hines is only 24 years old. He's younger than Hunter Green. Wow. No, I think that yeah, the Reds need to start heating up, especially in the lineup. It shouldn't take Matt McClain, Austin Hayes, Tyler Stevenson coming back for them to do so, because it's you're a Major League Baseball player. You should be able to hit Major League pitching. If the Reds can get things going, yeah, I'll bet on them, because at some point, just having good pitching will be enough. Now, of course, we saw what happened in 2020 when the Reds had great pitching in the playoffs and they decided not to score any runs over the 2 wild card. But, you know, that's ancient history. I don't remember that. No, I'm still very optimistic of this Reds team. And this series against Seattle will be it'll be important because while I think that Luis Castillo tonight is going to steal the Reds lunch money, they're going to need to really pick it up before, you know, the Cubs. Obviously, the Cubs have this rough stretch, so they need to gain ground just to make sure that they can keep in tow if they want to win the division, which is well within the realm of possibility.
Yeah. And, you know, you talked about the Reds in the playoffs. Do you happen to remember about 14, 15 years ago when the Reds had a perfect game thrown against them in the playoffs? Do you remember that? No?
I do not recall.
I rest my case. just don't talk about how the rest of that series went. We just want to talk about the perfect game.
I don't even know. I don't know if that was more painful or if the Giants series was painful, where the Reds had a 2-0 lead coming back to Cincinnati, and then they got beat. But no, I don't recall. I don't seem to recall. I think you're just making things up at this point, Troy, and that's not very cash money of you.
Well, you know, maybe that'll be our next watch party. We'll go back and we'll watch that game just so you remember. And
you're gonna need a new co-host at that point, sir.
Oh Lord, we have fun. Yeah, and we're gonna have fun today because we have a full slate of baseball games, although unfortunately no day games. Our first game is at 6:40 p.m. Eastern. The Nationals at the Pirates, getting us started. Jake Irvin at Mitch Keller. Nationals look to move to 7-10, while the Pirates look to move to 7-11. 6:40 p.m. Eastern. Mariners at the Reds. We've kind of touched on this game all day long, but Luis Castillo and Nick Lodolo, a good pitching battle there. Both teams look to move to 9-8. What's your thoughts on this game, Drew?
I love Luis Castillo, and it honestly broke my heart when the Reds traded him away. I really worry about this one because of how good Luis Castillo is, especially all that off-speed stuff that he throws, that ridiculous changeup that has all that motion. Hopefully, we get early season Luis Castillo, because with the Reds, it took him a while to warm up, which was really weird. Hopefully we get early season Luis Castillo and they can rough him up for five or six runs. It's going to be weird. It's going to be weird. I think this is the first time that Luis Castillo has faced the Reds. And it's going to suck. It will.
Yeah, it's going to be a good matchup. Both teams really have good pitching staffs, especially at the top half. The Mariners, their whole pitching staff, but the Reds at the top half. But it's going to be a fun series with the Mariners and the Reds to kind of see which team can get their offense on track. I think in the long run, over the course of a full 162, the Reds have the better offense. While I would give the nod to the Mariners rotation over a full 162, also, I think we would be very remiss if I did not tell you, happy Jackie Robinson Day, Drew.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah. We're 47 minutes in. We didn't forget. 6:40 p.m. Eastern. Also, Diamondbacks at the Marlins. Merrill Kelly at Gillespie. Diamondbacks look to move to 10-7, while the Marlins look to keep from falling to 500 at 8-8. 5 minutes later, the Giants at the Phillies. Future Hall of Famer Justin Verlander facing off against Jesus Lizard. 12-4 Giants at the 9-7 Phillies. 7:05 p.m. Eastern, Guardians at the Orioles. Charlie Morton getting the start for Baltimore there as the Guardians look to move to 9-7 and the Orioles look to move to 7-9. Also at 7:05, Red Sox at the Rays. Walker Buehler at Ryan Pepiot. Red Sox look to move to 9-10 while the Rays look to move above 500 at 9-8. 7:05 p.m. Eastern, the Royals at the Yankees. Michael Wacha at Max Fried. Royals look to move to 9-9, while the Yankees look to move to 10-7. Do you think that Max Fried can continue his early season success against the Kansas City Royals in New York?
I think so. With that lineup that Kansas City is trotting out, you know, it's like the Reds. It's Bobby Witt Jr. and a bunch of, you know, cabbage farmers. So I still don't understand how he ended up in New York, but you know, baseball owners don't like fun. So, yeah, I think that tear is going to continue.
Yeah. I think the Braves should have re-signed him, but that's a story for a different day. 7:07 as well as Freddie Freeman. I think the Braves should have re-signed Freddie Freeman as well.
Yes.
excuse me, 7:07 p.m. Eastern, Braves at the Blue Jays. Spencer Schwellenbach and his 0.45 ERA taking on Kevin Gausman, former Brave, and his 2.33 ERA. Braves look to move to 6-11, while the Blue Jays look to move to 10-8. 30 minutes later, 7:40 p.m. Eastern, Mets at the Twins as the Mets continue their week scheduled to start the year. Tylor Megill and his 0.63 ERA against weak competition against Bailey Ober. Mets look to move to 12-5, while the Twins look to move to 6-12. 7:40 p.m. Eastern, also Athletics at the White Sox, battle of the mid. Athletics look to move to 7-10, while the White Sox look to move to 5-11. And this one is in Chicago, not the high school stadium out there in Sacramento. 7:40 p.m. Eastern, Detroit Tigers at Milwaukee Brewers. Two guys with ERAs under 2 in Jack Flaherty and Quinn Priester. Tigers look to move to 11-6, while the Brewers look to move to 9-9. 7:45 p.m. Eastern, Astros at the Cardinals. Hunter Brown at Eric Fetty. Astros look to move to 8-9, while the Cardinals look to move above 500 to 9-8. 20 minutes later, 8:05 p.m. Eastern, Los Angeles Angels at the Texas Rangers. Yusei Kikuchi on the mound for the Angels against TBD for the Rangers. Angels look to move to 10-6, while the Rangers look to move to 10-7. 9:40 p.m. Eastern, series of the week, and really probably the pitching matchup of the day. Cubs at the Padres, Shota Imanaga at Randy Vasquez. Cubs look to move to 12-8, while the Padres look to move to look to improve on their major league best record and move to 15-3. And finally, 10:10 p.m. Eastern, Colorado Rockies at the Los Angeles Dodgers. Feltner at Knack. Rockies look to move to 4-13, while the Dodgers look to move to 13-6. It's a good day of baseball games. A lot of good pitching matchups there, Drew. Do you have any final thoughts on today's games?
Outside of the obvious, Cubs Padres going to be fun. Mariners Reds, though, that's a good matchup. That Braves Blue Jays matchup, Schwellenbach versus Gausman is going to be interesting. Braves, they got to keep chipping away. I mean, obviously they're only 6 games under 500, but 6 games under 500 when you play 16 games makes it feel like the world is ending. I'm still buying in on the Braves. Spencer Schwellenbach is a freak. He's a great pitcher. That'll be a good one. Reds legend Kevin Gausman.
Man, Kevin Gausman gets around.
He sure does.
Tomorrow, we'll talk about it more tomorrow, but the Braves are getting their other Spencer back in Spencer Strider to start tomorrow's game. So their outlook on the season is only looking up. But speaking of looking up, it's been a great day here on the First Pitch Podcast. It's always a great day when there is baseball. So thank you for joining us today on this extended episode of First Pitch. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on the notification icon so you can be notified when more episodes just like this one go live. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star rating and share the show with your friends. Send them to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can get their daily source of baseball talk. Make sure you check out the First Pitch newsletter. Today's issue talked about kind of the Dodgers being overhyped just because of more weekly power rankings coming out this week, and the Dodgers are still ranked number one somehow after dropping 6 of 9 prior to those power rankings. So check that out. Link for the newsletter is in the description. It is free to subscribe and receive that in your email inbox every single morning, though we do appreciate any and all paid subscribers as they help keep the bills on around here. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.